It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy.
Well, that was abrupt. I forgot, if you minimize the virtual cart deck, it just shuts down. How about that? Oh, anyway, here we are. It's Titanic Tuesday on the horn for this, the 21st day of June 2022, the first day of summer. Yeah, longest day of the year. It's the summer solstice. There will be no greater amount of daylight for any day remaining in the remainder of 2022. Spring is over. Summer is here. And yeah, I confess, you know, it's weird how the days grow shorter in summer, but actually longer in winter. Somebody needs to do something about this screwed up planet. What the hell's going on here? But no, it's the first day of summer. It's the summer solstice. I find there to be something sacred about the solstices. I don't know why. Maybe it's just the ancient pagan in me. But this day means more to me than most holy days. It just does. Hi, I'm Robin. And welcome to Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. We have plenty of... God, if you watched the hearings today, you know that there was an abundance of Titanic intellect on display, not on the part of the panel or of the witnesses, but in the form of, video presentations of Nitwit Nero. Now, there was real heroism today, and we will get to that in short order, but every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. By the way, you hear that? That is not the old box fan. Y'all, that's an air conditioner. On the first day of summer, as temperatures outside approach 90 degrees, it's going to be even hotter later in the week. I checked in with my dear friend Miss Terry down on the Gulf Coast, and she said they're expecting north of 100. And you know what? If you've never experienced 100 degree heat with 90% humidity, oh, you don't know what hot is. I mean, there really is. You know that old saw about, yeah, but it's a dry heat. Well, that's a real thing, because 110. So it's going to be hot and humid here. But oh, today was beautiful. Today was so pretty. Not a cloud in the sky. This is one of those Robert Frost days. Oh, stormy, stormy world, the days you were not furled in mist and cloud are days so very few, I cannot help but wonder whence I get the lasting sense of so much warmth and light. It may be altogether from one day's perfect weather, when starting clear at dawn, the day swept clearly on to finish clear at eve. This is that day. By the way, the name of that poem, for anybody who doesn't know, is Happiness Makes Up in Height for What It Lacks in Length. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Thank yous go out to our 21st day of the month subscribers. In this case, our summer solstice subscribers. And so that means that thanks go out to our pal of longstanding, Harold, the chairman, president, and CEO of the Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Sotstris. Thank you, Harold. And thank you, Karen. Thank you, Karen, so very much for being a recent subscriber to the Horn. Thank you. And those are our two subscribers for the 21st day of the month. And thanks again to Daryl, who subscribed a whole year's worth yesterday. Thank you, Daryl. Thank you so much. So what does that mean? That means that we're at something. Yeah, I know. It was 1460. 1460 is the fundraising hole for this. Well, it's 1460 is where we stand as we... let's see, we will have four broadcast days next week, so we've got a chance of finishing the month even, but we need to climb out of this $1,460 hole, and thank you very kindly. Ralphs, oftentimes serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Hi, Ralphs. I'm offering a $50 challenge in honor of Shay Moss and Ruby Freeman, Lady Ruby and Shay. And that's just a wonderful, wonderful sentiment, Ralphs. Thank you so much, because they were going to lead the program anyway. Profiles and Courage, and we will get that's where we're going to start. That's where we're going to start the program this evening. Let me take care of a couple of notes. Thank you to Scott in San Diego. Who followed through on what he said yesterday evening. That's what got us to 1160 and why we're at 1460 now. Scott saying, happy summer solstice, or as it's known on Easter Island, toasty toes time. That's true. Oh, it came with a graphic. What makes me think that comes from Mad Magazine? If the toes are at Stonehenge, the head is at Easter Island. Yeah, toasty toes time. Thank you, Scott. Thank you. No, actually, Ralphs, you don't, because Karen jumped in last month or the month before. Thank you, Karen. Yes, I did say we have air conditioning in the studio. That's the roaring you hear behind me. And it's doing an excellent job. It's only 78 degrees in the studio. I'm downright comfortable. And it'll be even cooler by, say, tomorrow night after it blows a little while longer. It's wonderful. Lady B gets us started. Today's hearings. Everyone's testimony was powerful, but Lady Ruby and her daughter Shay really got to me. Same here. I was bawling, and they were tears of fury. It's hard enough to be black in America, and although the amount of blacks in the South offers the illusion of safety in numbers, it don't mean shit when racist groups are prompted to seek you out. And in this case, by racist groups, we mean the GOP, the GQP, or the Republican Party. But Lady B says, it don't mean shit when racist groups are prompted to seek you out. That's what racists do. They seek to target you with or without being promoted. But when the President of the United States tells you to target the black people, merely doing their jobs like everybody else in the room, because he feels they're the real culprits behind this election loss, well, that's racism, folks. I know some of you might argue it was just one of his tactics, but why couldn't it be both? Who's the easiest target in the room? The 60-year-old grandma counting votes in her Lord and Taylor sweater, or the dark-skinned black woman with the long, colorful nails who must be an affirmative action hire because she couldn't possibly be there because she knows what she's doing? Every day it gets worse. Every day we find out how close we came to losing our democracy. Well, let's face it, y'all, most Americans don't care. The hearings are in the middle of the workday, so unless you got one of those types of jobs where you can work and watch on your computer, how are you going to know or care? There's a meme called "Ain't Nothing Gonna Happen." Some people get really angry when they see that. They say those who use it are impatient and need to give things more time to work through the legal process. Tell that to the witnesses who testified today. Having your whole life interrupted for a crime that was obvious and on display to the whole world, yet knowing deep down today's evidence may still not be enough to punish those involved? And that is the reality we face. What's the end result of all of this? To show that Trump's a traitor? To show that senators, congresspeople, and the right-wing media encouraged and participated in fomenting a coup against the United States government? Editorially, I'll add, I think we are open to beginning. At first, if you remember going back, at first, some supporters of Donald Trump rioted on January. No, that wasn't a riot. That was too organized to be a riot. So, with much cajoling, the for-profit media finally began saying that it was an insurrection. That's better. Now we are finally using the word coup. Something inside me badly wants us to use the word putsch. Putsch. P-U-T-S-C-H. Putsch. It's a German word. They had one in a beer hall once. We might call January 6th the Capitol Grounds putsch. You know, the beer hall putsch in 1922 was not successful, just like the Capitol Grounds putsch of January 6th. 2022? What? 100 years later? Huh? Get out! It wasn't successful either, but, you know, 11 years later, the people who ran the beer hall putsch in 1922 had control over the entire German government. Guess what, y'all? You know how yesterday we talked about the Republican platform in the state of Texas? Where, among other things, they got their secessionist on? Y'all, we might want to let them secede. But, well, I'm sorry, Lady B. I should let your words stand as they are without editorializing in the middle of them. But like I've said before, your notes are like they're like a conversation. And I've been thinking about the GOP Texas platform ever since it came out. And I got to thinking, you know, if Texas should decide to secede, and if we should decide to let them instead of having a modern-day Sherman go down and throw a great big barbecue all over Texas, we'll have to build a wall around them. And that wall will have to be in Oklahoma. Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico. And Oklahoma won't go along with that, so they'll probably just follow suit and secede like Texas did. And Louisiana won't put up with that, and they'll probably just secede like Oklahoma did. And Arkansas isn't going to be left out, so they'll secede just like Louisiana did. And then Alabama and South Carolina, they'll secede, even though they don't share a border with Texas. They'll secede anyway, because they don't want to be last, and because that's what Mississippi's for. And the dominoes will fall. I mean, that's how it happened last time. One got started and everybody else followed suit. Yeah, I know. 99 years. It wasn't the 2022 putsch. I know. But I think in 2022, it's about damn time we started talking about it as the 2021 Capitol Grounds putsch. Anyway, Lady B, when I interrupted, said, what's the end result of all this? To show that Trump is a traitor? To show that senators, congresspeople, and the right-wing media encouraged and participated in fomenting a coup against the United States government? We've already got right-wing nutcases running in and winning primaries all over the country. The big lie is their most prominent talking point. Again, Texas enshrined the big lie in the official Republican Party platform of that state. There's been little to no pushback, or at least any that'll make any difference at this point. So what are we hoping for here? What do we actually think is going to happen? I'll keep watching. I'll keep hoping, Lady B says. But as the damning evidence grows, so should public outrage. Everything shown so far is good, but if they're saving the best for last, they need to step it up. The 4th of July is not far off. Americans are going to start eating and drinking Friday night, skip work on Monday, and come back groggy and tired on Wednesday. Will they drop the bomb then? And with all the outrage, is it safe to assume the holiday will go off without a hitch? In addition to the usual violence, there may be a tax plan. This is downright scary. We've waited way too long, and we're dragging this out way too slowly. Get out of your benign and oblivious bubbles, y'all. Shit could get real ugly real fast. We've had it too good for too long. We let Trump get away with so much we don't even know the danger we faced and will continue to face. Fuck, I don't know anymore. I'm truly at a loss. Here's to looking forward to your clarity. Hi, clarity. And wisdom on this, Robin. Cheer us up, but don't sing. That's worse than hearing Rudy Giuliani's voice on your racist uncle's answering machine. That or hearing alley cats fucking. But you do you, girl. If you rub your butt across the grass, the color green will stain your ass. Yes, it will. God. I know, and save your relatability for your friends. Time and tempo, you know, time and tempo, and weather on the Thames. Love, Lady B. There will be no singing. No, not at 1460. Not by a long shot. But 1460 became 1445. Thank you to Christopher. Christopher says, let's all buy Lady Ruby t-shirts and wear them proudly on her behalf. By God, that's a fine idea. And I'm sure some enterprising internet marketer is already out there selling them, of course, with not a goddamn dime going to Lady Ruby, who said she will not wear the shirt. She wore a Lady Ruby shirt every day because she ran a little emporium. And she said she will never wear one again. Because at this point it invites threats to her life. Shame on these. I know that sounds so... It sounds so Pollyannish, but shame, the real kind, the real shame upon these animals. And somebody's going to say, hey, don't call them animals. Animals are better than this. I know, but I got to have shame on these maggots. And I don't mean M-A-G-A-T-S's, that thing which they are. Morons are governing America, Trump supporters. I mean maggots. M-A-G-G-O-T-S. Writhing, creeping, crawling, roiling, stinking, filthy maggots. Irredeemable, and when they survive, they just turn into something more noxious. Thank you, Lady B, and thank you, Christopher. So we are down at 1445, and that's a great start. Thank you. And so Christopher has knocked out $15 of the challenge put forward by Ralphs. The Shea Moss and Ruby Freeman, Lady Ruby Freeman challenge. So there's $35 remaining on that. Matt in San Francisco. Shea Moss and Lady Ruby. The government needs to provide those patriotic women financial compensation, enough to buy a house and start a new life. After what they've been through because of 45 and his minions, it's the least the country can do. If 45 met the same fate as Mussolini, I would not be mad. Lock up all the beer belly putsch participants. From your mouth to God's ear, Matt. Lock them all up. And you know what? Yeah, let's do buy him a house. Let's buy him a house far, and I recognize that this is kind of a freighted thing because I was going to say far, far, far away from Georgia. But that's the larger problem. And I always think back to the partition of India in 1948. When a mass exodus began from what would become Pakistan and what had become India, with Hindus fleeing Pakistan and Muslims fleeing India because they felt like, because to them it felt like they could not be safe in the new nations. Then again, how safe are Shea Moss and Lady Ruby? It would put a significant strain if all the progressive people, all the liberal people, all the decent people just left and went to sane states. And Lord, it would take us some getting used to. I've been to Minnesota. Minnesota's beautiful. There are some hills in Minnesota, but you have to be willing to deal with the dead of winter from like September to June to live there. And well, but it's a beautiful place. And I guess that shows a little bit of prejudice on my part. Oregon, California, Washington. Could y'all absorb all of the redneck progressives, and would you want to? You know, that's what y'all need is a horde of Southerners going, what? Where's the biscuits and gravy, y'all? I mean, yeah, breakfast burritos are great, but can we have some biscuits and gravy? But where's the country? Where's the Kaneka? And Southern progressives would be leaving Alabama pulling trailers behind them full of Kaneka. You know, because it's vacuum sealed and it keeps a really long time. Thank you, Lady B. Lady B has gotten us down to $30 to go on Ralph's challenge. And she said, for my ladies, Ruby and her daughter, Shay, keep your heads up, sister girls. Y'all are definitely on St. Peter's list. And they are. And they're on another list, too. And I don't think I'm at all out of line in suggesting that these strong black women need to go on a list alongside Ida B. Wells, Rosa Parks, Ruby Brooks, and any number of strong black women who have refused to bow to the pressures of the white supremacist right in this country. No matter what kind of political label you put on them. I would not be aggrieved if they were awarded the Congressional Gold Medal or the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I think both are appropriate. And maybe doing so would help to... Well, what's the line we came up with years and years and years ago? Stoke the stroke. Because don't you know, that there was some shouting and screaming every time, with every single word that came out of the witnesses' mouths in the hearing today, because one thing was abundantly clear, Nitwit Nero was up to his, hairy ear holes in the conspiracy to steal the election in 2020, Remember, everything a maggot says, up to and including the head maggot, is either confession or projection.
They're stealing the election.
Was cover for the fact that he was trying to steal the election. So let's give them both. Hey, President Biden, Presidential Medal of Freedom for Shea Moss and Lady Ruby. Hey, Congress, Congressional Gold Medal for Lady Ruby and Shea Moss. Do it yesterday. But there's something else that goes into that. You know, Matt said a couple of minutes ago, let's buy him a nice house somewhere. And while I am in general agreement with that sentiment, frankly, I would prefer that Nitwit Nero did it. Because, doggone it, listening to the testimony today, and I don't want to discount the testimony of anybody else. It was Brad Raffensperger, I think, who was talking about the fact that his daughter-in-law, who has two young children, had her house burglarized by the maggots. His daughter-in-law, who was married to his, Brad Raffensperger's son, who is dead. His daughter-in-law is a widow, and the maggots burglarized her house. Just as they burglarized Shea Moss's grandma's house.
Trying to make a citizen's arrest!
Because the stochastic terrorism put out there by the likes of Rudy Giuliani and more particularly Nitwit Nero weaponized his followers to do unspeakable things that got spoken today. This is who they are. This is, and make no mistake, get this all the way into your bones, this is the Republican Party. You know, there's another issue that's out there today, and that is some Americans who have been captured fighting alongside Ukrainian forces in that war. They've been captured by Mother Russia, and Mother Russia says that they will put the Americans on trial and that the Geneva Conventions do not apply to the Americans. That's the problem with the Geneva Conventions. They only work. They're Tinkerbell. They only work as long as you believe in them. And in this case, Tinkerbell's coughing up blood on the front porch. You know why Mother Russia can say that the Americans captured fighting alongside the Ukrainians will not be treated as prisoners of war and accorded the protections of the Geneva Convention? You know why he's able to say that? Well, because, you know, about 18 years ago, people like me and other progressive and liberal broadcasters were pointing out that when Bush the Dumber declared people captured on the battlefield to be enemy combatants and not accorded Geneva Convention protections and instead summarily thrown into the shithole, hellhole, devil's island shitbox that is Guantanamo Bay. Well, some of us said, you know, these chickens are going to come home to roost one of these days. One of these days, there's going to be some Americans caught like this, and they're going to be treated exactly as W treated those Muslim fighters. Guess what? And the reason I mention that is because Republicans, with all due apologies to Gertrude Stein, Republicans are Republicans are Republicans are Republicans, and they never stop being that. They were toxic long before Donald Trump thought about running for president, and toxic they will be long after he has gone to his much-deserved and extremely warm reward. And that's fact. But the bottom line is, I got kind of triggered watching the hearings today. I really did. And by triggered, I mean suddenly I was back in law school again. Oh, Lady B, you don't know how close we just got. I absolutely loathe another Auld Lang Syne by Dan Fogelberg. And the minute I said, suddenly I was back in law school again, my old DJ brain spun up, you know, queued up to that part of another Auld Lang Syne, you know, right at the end. And I very nearly, oh God, you don't know how close we got, sang. The horror. Save your relatability for your friends. But I did, because suddenly I really want to say, I'm not gonna though. Just for a moment I was back at school. There! It's out of my system. Thank God we're safe. But I was, and I was learning the law of defamation. And I was learning things, because you learn all this, and anybody who's ever sat for the bar exam knows this, you learn all of this useless arcana that you at least think is useless. And then, 30 years later, you're sitting behind a microphone, and all of a sudden, turns out not to be so useless after all. I remember learning about the difference between libel and libel per se. And libel per se is different from libel in that, just thumbnailing, libel is a false and defamatory statement. And it has to be proven before a jury. And, you know, if you're a public figure, New York Times versus Sullivan and Falwell v. Hustler come into play, at least for the time being. And on the other hand, libel per se is, well, in regular libel, you have to prove the libel. You have to prove that the statement made was libelous. With libel per se, you don't have to prove that, no, not quite, Flavio. Libel per se is an allegation of criminal conduct or of insanity or of shameful disease. Now, what Nitwit Nero did 18 times was libelous insofar as it was broadcast, because broadcast is a form of publication. But it was libel per se because, with regard to Shea Moss and Lady Ruby Freeman, there were 18 separate declarations of criminal conduct against two private citizens who had in no wise sought to be within the public eye. And so at a trial for libel per se, and we're using broad brushes here, the plaintiff would not have to prove that the statement was libelous. It would be, in a way, self-proving, because it was an allegation of criminality. Election fraud, voter fraud, voting fraud, which which is a crime that is punishable within the criminal code of Georgia and within the criminal code of the United States. And then it becomes a matter of the jury assessing the damages. I don't know if the other, if other people watch this, especially their testimony, particularly Shane Moss's. But as I watched, the one thing that kept going through my mind was, Lord, what a lawsuit this would be. Lady Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss versus Donald J. Trump. Trump for President 2020. Rudy Giuliani. You know, sue them all and let God sort them out. And frankly, my feeling on it is they should sue, and the jury should be instructed that they had an absolute right to grant a verdict sufficient to make sure that Donald Trump never, ever, 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 ever does it again to anybody for so long as he lives. In short, my fondest dream is that the jury verdict in such a case would be sufficient to pauperize not only Trump, but his sons and daughters, his grandchildren, their grandchildren, and Trump's out to the goddamned 90th generation. Treason cannot work a corruption of blood. But by God, maybe a judgment can. That's just my thought on it. Thank you, Henry. Henry just jumped in and finished off Ralph's challenge, and so that gets us down to thirteen forty on your AM dial. Thank you, Henry. We are at 1340 to finish, or to not to finish, but to get caught up, and that's magnificent. If we could knock out a couple of, because what is 1340? Let's see. That's 4 days of programming and a little bit of one more. 140, almost half a day's programming, and four other days remain unfunded. So that's today, yesterday, and 2 days last week, and $140 of a fifth day. We are, in short, behind. Thank you, Henry. Thank you. Dare to dream. Because I sat there watching the hearings thinking, and knowing that there are some pretty sharp lawyers on there, and the way that Adam Schiff was questioning them sounded an awful lot like the kind of question you would put to your client on direct in a case of in a defamation case against Nitwit Nero. I wept tears of hot fury as I heard Shea Moss talk about why she enjoyed working the polls, and she talked about the voters she loved most were the elderly voters, and that it gave her pride to hand out her card and help them sort out the election process, the voting process. And she talked about how she had been taught how hard, how brutal, how deadly the struggle had been to secure voting rights for African Americans, and how she felt like she was really doing a civic duty in her work. And to have that patriotism, because working elections is a patriotic undertaking, to work the polls, the people who work the polls, well, they're doing the ground-level grunt work of democracy. And like everything else he touches, he made it dirty. It's like that, who was it, Steve Schmidt, that said, everything Trump touches dies. This is that. He took something noble and tried to make it filthy and corrupt. And at least to my mind, the Inquisitor, and particularly Adam Schiff, through his line of questioning, made it abundantly clear that Donald Trump had committed what is called a dignity tort, that he had engaged in slander, libel, and that it had been perpetuated by everyone who acted upon his words. The Speaker of the Arizona House as well was impressive. Now that guy's a Republican, through and through. I mean, no question about it. And, like I said, he too had stories of horrors that he was subjected to by maggots in Arizona. Rusty Bowers is his name. He was pressured relentlessly by the Trump mob and by Trump himself to rig the election in Arizona. And I respect him for coming forward. And I also take note of some pretty strategic, I understand Lady B's cynicism, but I think these hearings are being stage managed down to the last detail. Rusty Bowers, in his testimony, said he went on at length about why he referenced Ronald Reagan. And he sounded like a, well, dewy-eyed little fanboy when he talked about how he and two other people got to walk through Ronald Reagan's house. And I'll grant you, I mean, we all know how I feel about old 666, Ronald Wilson Reagan. We know how I feel about the fact that he opened his 1980 candidacy with a bunch of dog whistles and bottle rockets specifically aimed at aggrieved racist Southerners back in August of 1980 in Neshoba County, Mississippi, how he went on and spoke at another home of the Klan in Tuscumbia, Alabama, the little town with scum in the middle. As I sat there listening to Rusty Bowers wax romantic about Ronald Reagan, I the first thing I thought was, you know, I wonder if Bishop Romero felt the same way about Reagan. I wonder if those nuns in El Salvador who were raped by the men that Ronald Reagan called freedom fighters in El Salvador, I wonder if they felt the same way. I wonder if they got that misty-eyed, dewy sense of Cracker Barrel patriotism that he evoked in people. I wonder. And then the some other portion of me said, "Shut up, Robin. This is for a reason." And it was. It was. This was an outreach. This was an outreach to whatever remaining decent Republicans still exist in the United States of America. I do not share the optimism of some of our political chattering class that there are very many of them. I think the Republican Party has been a lost cause for a very long time, up to and including the reign of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. But that was there. That was a little dog whistle to anybody who might still be a Republican and be marginally decent. That there was a way out. Rusty Bowers talked about how maggots and cue balls had called him a pervert and corrupt. They drove through his neighborhood with loudspeakers. They argued and threatened his neighbors. Yeah, he was either a groomer or a pedophile. He talked about the guy with three bars on his chest. That means he's a free percenter. Who was arguing with his neighbor and had a gun on him. He talked about his daughter being gravely ill and deeply upset about what was being done to their family. And his wife began to weep. He's an interesting guy, Rusty Bowers, actually, among other things. He's a beekeeper. He's an orchardist. And a sculptor, of all things. How about that? A sculptor. He loves to spend time with his grandchildren. But none of that mattered to the maggots. Because the only thing that matters to the maggots is that they do their obeisance to their God Emperor. And everybody they called today had some sort of similar story about being harassed, about being tormented, about how having their very lives threatened by the maggots in their attempt to succeed in their putsch against constitutional governance in the United States. But Lady B is right. There are some that even this will not reach. He has to be utterly, completely, and totally destroyed. And even then, some will still remain. You know, I can't tell you how many times that I've tuned into my filthy morning habit and hearing Joe Scarborough wax rhapsodically about his beloved Republican daddy, and I'm not being an asshole about it. I'm sorry if I came off that way. Missed my daddy too. And I think my daddy was a great man as well. He bore up under struggles. Oddly, you know, Joe and I are very near in age, and we had a very similar upbringing. But he talked about how, you know, his daddy was a rock-ribbed Republican all of his life. And how he defended Nixon till the bitter end. And then finally, only finally, when he was presented with the incontrovertible evidence that Richard Milhouse Pinhead, as Harry Truman named him, Nixon, was as crooked as a dog's hind leg. And only then did he finally relent and admit that maybe he was wrong. In the immediate aftermath of the Civil War, there was some degree of remorse among some Southerners. The Southern men who survived, who had initially said, you know, we are on a fool's errand. This is going to be bloody, and this is going to be bad, and we're going to lose, and nonetheless rode off into battle. Well, those who survived got to say, well, it's not like nobody told you. But within another 10 years, there was an insurrection, a terrorist insurrection in full flower called the Ku Klux Klan that President Grant had to send federal troops in to put down. And at roughly the same time, you see the rise of what was called the Lost Cause and the re-ennobling of those treasonous fucks who fought to keep people in bondage. Those evil, evil, evil white people who did that. And I fear that we may see something similar. You know, you can hear distant echoes of it among people who say, well, you know, Nixon just... And they still say, oh, you know, Nixon just got caught. Or they say things like, well, you know, Nixon was... What, you know how you know Nixon was a decent man? He wouldn't be welcome in the Republican Party of today. I mean, it's true. But it doesn't absolve him of just how godforsaken awful he is and was. And there will, and the big lie will continue as well. You know, we're 20 years on from 9/11, and there are still people who think that George W. Bush put on a little black coat and a little black hat and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. What about Building 7? And with every conspiracy that boils up in this country, the next one becomes the potentially becomes that much more awful. And true enough, Jeremy in Vermont points out, some of the very same nuns you speak of who didn't get the message their abusers wanted were taken up in planes and taught to fly without parachutes. Argentina, anyone? The reign of the generals and colonels and admirals and whatnot. Yeah. The well is thoroughly poisoned, Flavio says. The Southern strategy, thanks to Limbaugh and Trump, poisoned the entire country. Well, hold on there, Flavio. You're a little late to the party. The Southern strategy began in 1968 with Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon, with an assist from George C. Wallace. Flavio adds, Derek Chauvin was from Minnesota and the cowards around him. Rural Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan are just as bad as the deepest South. Fox News is in every bar in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Michigan. AM hate radio is all over the U.S. Flavio says, I have no illusions. Well, Flavio, you are an observer of the culture, and for that reason, you have no illusions. And that's part of why I say that we need to save the whole country and not give any portion of it up. Maybe that makes me a Pollyanna. But it also makes me a realist. Can you imagine can you imagine a seceded Texas? Hey, y'all, I mean, we're seceding and everything, but we'd appreciate it if you'd leave all them guns and tanks and planes and bombs and shit there. I mean, we're going to need them. No. No. No, Cletus. You're going to have to... Texas is going to have themselves some taxes. Taxes for Texas. And y'all going to have to build your own military, and if you lift one little bitty finger, we're going to roast your ass. Well, I mean, can't you at least leave the AR? No, you're going to have to buy your own. And your own bullets, too. And built your own tanks. Your own submarines and your own Navy. I don't know if y'all noticed, but that's supporting a humongous bloated military is some expensive shit. It's going to be very expensive to live in the Republic of Texas. Very much indeed. Well, hey, an anonymous friend has helped nearly wipe out that half a day that remained. So we are $40 away from being fully funded for everything but the last 4 days. we've got $1,240 to go. Thank you. Thank you very much. And that $100 contribution was in honor of the new air conditioner. You hear that, new air conditioner? Oh, she seems pleased. Mm-hmm. And the nicest thing about the new unit, by the way. Well, why does that sound filthy? Is that it's not only an air conditioner, it's a heater too. So I may not. We may actually be able to keep the studio warm this coming winter. And I can't tell you how exciting that is to me. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. We got $40 to go, and we will be, let's see, one, Tuesday, Monday. Yeah, we'll be fully funded for, last Tuesday? Something like that? Yeah. And then we can do Wednesday, Thursday, and today, and yesterday, and we'd be all the way up to speed. That's fantastic. Thank you. And, you know, a word to Rusty, Scott says. I was really starting to feel for him until he started in on old Ronnie. Here's why. In 1981, before the warmth of his wrinkled handprint on the family Bible cooled, Reagan laid out his shining city on the hill horse shit. America opened the door to someone who blatantly expressed his utter disregard and disdain for all those not in his pampered class and surely those not of his race. He made it acceptable for white folks to go out and do likewise. After 8 goddamned years of that, we got G.H.W. Bush's kinder, gentler, more of the same. And don't even get me started on Butt W. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty nauseating to me, too, until I at least recognized that there was some stagecraft involved, Scott, and that that was there for a reason. And it probably gave Liz Cheney a warm fuzzy. And I sat there looking at Liz Cheney thinking about all the maggots who are...
she's a traitor, she's a traitor, she's a rhino.
Bitch, please. That's daddy's little deferment there. She's the reason Dick Cheney didn't have to go and run the risk of some sort of grim and bloody death in the jungles of Vietnam. But he learned enough not going to Vietnam to be absolutely willing to coldly and mercilessly participate in and, in many ways, order up. Because he was running the country. I mean, come on. Order up the slaughter of a million innocent Iraqi civilians. No, I will not forget that. No, I'm not living in the past because the past is not gone and the people in Iraq are still fucking grieving and they're going to carry a grudge against the United States for 1,000 generations. I would not screw with the Cheneys. Because, God, her daddy shot his buddy in the face and made the buddy apologize for his face getting in the way of Dick's shotgun blast. God almighty. Do you even... Yeah. You get the idea. And she had a... she had a little something to say. Outside the hearing room during a break, she referred to today's testimony as compelling. She said,
"Well, I think that you've seen throughout the hearings that we are putting forward very clearly a number of instances in which there are serious questions about the actions of the former president. We'll continue to do so."
I'm sorry, I just hear Dick Cheney's voice when I see it. But, she said, both Republicans and Democrats were in a position to say that they did their duty. They did what was right in the face of, you know, Donald Trump had been told multiple times by his attorney general, by his deputy attorney general, by his campaign officials that what he was saying was not true, that these were lies, yet he continued to push them. In the hearing, she said, Trump, nitwit Nero, did not care about these threats of violence. We cannot let America become a nation of conspiracy theories and thug violence. At the end, she said, the United States is a nation of laws. She said, institutions cannot defend themselves. Individuals do that. And then she called out the chicken shits. She said, Mark Meadows is hidden behind President Trump's claims of executive privilege and immunity from subpoenas. We are engaged now in litigation with Mr. Meadows. And she said, we also have yet to hear from White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who has yet to speak. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Kim from New York says, Bowers is not the hero he seems. It shows you that there's no Republican who's without stink, no matter how much we wish it. In an interview with AP, among other things, he said, if he's the nominee, if he was up against Biden, I'd vote for him again. Simply because what he did the first time before COVID was so good for the country. In my view, it was great. Ugh. And of course, they got the vow of loyalty out of Brad Raffensperger too, saying, it's true that you wanted Donald Trump to win, didn't you? Oh, I sure did. And this is how beer hall putches turn into the overthrow of democratic governments. Because they didn't learn. Hey, thank you, Brian. Thank you so much, Brian. We are fully funded for everything but 4 shows now. Thank you. And if we can, well, we can, if we can knock out Wednesday and Thursday, that'd be $600. I don't know if we can have that many people in here, but if we could do that, well, we'd be in a lot better shape than we are now. And that's easy enough to say. Thank you, Brian. Thank you. Yeah, Kim, I agree. Because Republicans, you know, they can live next door to you. You can think, well, I'm some fine people. But when and they can say things like, and I've seen this in real time, in real life. You can see a Republican take umbrage to a reference that Republicans are attacking, say, the LGBTQ community all over the United States. And a Republican, just a sole Republican, will say, well, I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican all my life. And I am in full support of the LGBTQ community. The problem is, and you know what? You can take them at their word. If you're standing around at a cocktail party and somebody mutters the F word or the word for the drivetrain of an automobile in regard to a trans person, they'll say, I'm insulted by that. I have friends who are trans, and I have friends who are gay, and those are awful words. And then come the next election, they'll go out and vote for anti-trans, anti-gay politicians. And I don't know why. I don't know why it's so hard. For the life of me, I don't. They cannot make their politics match whatever their morals are. Hey, thanks, Jeremy. We started 4 days ago. Thank you. So we've got $1,180 to go in fundraising. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you a ton. Maybe we can build a little momentum. 1180, thank you. And then there's Then there's Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He works in the lumber mill there. He walks down the street. All the people he meets, they say, "Hey, what's your name?" And he says, "My name is Ron Johnson. I work in Wisconsin." Never mind. I learned that at my mother's knee. I don't know where it comes from. Maybe it was a song out of the 20s or 30s or something. I don't know. But, Ron Johnson got a mention during the hearings today. He is now an official co-conspirator. Not yet indicted, and we probably need to talk about that, too. Writing at the Washington Post, Leanne Caldwell said it was the first time that any senator's actions had been highlighted by the J6 committee. Republican U.S. Senator Ron Johnson wanted to hand then-Vice President Mike Pence official-looking documents falsely affirming former President Donald Trump won in Wisconsin and Michigan as Pence prepared to confirm Joe Biden's win in January 2021, according to text messages revealed at the hearing today. Now, that was from the Wisconsin State Journal. The Wisconsin document, signed by 10 Republicans who convened in the state capitol on December 14, 2020, was filled out on the same day the Democratic slate of Wisconsin electors met in the same building to deliver the state's 10 electoral votes to Biden. The meeting of Republicans occurred after the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled Biden had won the election. So, in other words, they knew what they were doing, and what they were doing was illegal. And they'd done it anyway. And so Ron Johnson's staff and Pence's staff were texting each other January 6th. Sean Riley says, "Johnson needs to hand something to V. POTUS. Please advise." Chris Hodgson of Pence's staff says, "What is it?" Sean Riley says, "Alternate slate of electors for Michigan and Wisconsin because archivists didn't receive them." Chris Hodgson replies, "Do not give that to him." So thus far, arguably the dumbest man in the United States Senate, don't worry, Tommy Potato Farm is working on it. Proved himself not only an idiot, but a traitor. End of the bargain. Over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they wrote, "The evidence presented Tuesday once again showed that Wisconsin, one of seven states Biden won, where groups of Republicans gathered as false presidential electors, was at the center of efforts to overturn the election. A text message from state GOP Executive Director Mark Jefferson, also presented Tuesday, indicated Trump's campaign team wanted the elector paperwork flown to Washington, D.C. And I got, you know, one of the things that just pesters my busy little brain is to sit there during these hearings and wonder what Merrick Garland's doing right now. It would be awfully nice if the answer to that would be preparing indictments for Donald Trump and his henchmen. I just wish I'd had any confidence that that was the case. Oh, and we have we've crossed the into the second hour of the program, and there is other stuff out there. remember, the Supreme Court of the United States is still in business for a little while longer. It seems apparent now that the Dobbs decision won't come out until the very last minute, at which point they will flee to their, you know, the likes of Sammy Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas, and Ann's boy Neil, and Brat, and the handmaid from that cult that abused children and whose leaders rutted on each other in front of restrained toddlers. They'll head off to their well-guarded compounds while people who can become pregnant look around and realize, how about that? We're second-class citizens. If second class. Well, another religious decision, and this is turning, this is rapidly turning into some sort of the Supreme Court of the United States is becoming some sort of arm of the, I don't know, the American Revolutionary Guard, whatever. Sorry, I'm not feeling particularly artistic in that reference. It just gets me a little too upset. Well, they issued a decision today coming out of Maine. Maine had a program whereby parents could receive direct payments so that the kids could go to a different school. But the Maine statute, in accordance with the Constitution of the United States and the, there it is, original intent of the framers, oh boy, this is, if this doesn't put paid to the fraud of originalism, I don't know what does. The monies could be used for non-sectarian schooling for the kids from this state of Maine program. Hey, Ralphs, tell Susie I said hi because we got a Maine story here. Once again, it was a 6-3 decision. Two families in Maine, I'm sure some Republican tax-exempt organization dragged a $100 bill through down a dirt road to find them. The case was called Carson versus Macon, and there were two families there in Maine, and they claimed that their religious liberty rights were being violated because they didn't get free money checks from the Maine government, so that they could spend the money to send their children to religious indoctrination centers. Because, again, the Maine program said that it would be a violation of the separation of church and state for state funds to be used to pay religious schools. Well, Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor and Stephen Breyer all said, well, that's the way it should be. Because, see, that's the thing. A lot of rural communities in Maine don't have high schools. And so the towns then contract with other local nearby high schools to educate the kids. And there's also the possibility of sending them to a private school, but it can't be a religious shop. Well, the parents aren't really aggrieved. It's the schools, and they want the money. And they say that they said they were being discriminated against because they promoted a Christian worldview. Yeah. Now, that Christian worldview includes discrimination against homosexuals, individuals who are transgender, and non-Christians. And they're not bashful about it. They're openly discriminatory. And so the 6-3 majority said, it ain't fair not to give free government money checks to the religious chop shops to teach children to be bigots. And so now, Maine's program has been struck down, and taxpayer dollars, taxpayers in Maine are going to be footing the bill to send children to private religious schools where they will be carefully taught to hate. Bless her heart, and I mean that in a good way, Sonia Sotomayor said, today the court takes us to a place where separation of church and state become a constitutional violation. Forcing American taxpayers to fund private religious education erodes the foundation of our democracy and harms students. Because she can't just type, this is crazier than a head and a hog is in the ass. That's just not Supreme Court-y enough. And this will be used on a nationwide basis to claim that religious institutions have an absolute right to taxpayer money. She went on, Sotomayor did, to say that this gang of wild-eyed jurisprudential punks, thugs, footpads, and high-cut purses and highwaymen from the Federalist Society, quote, continues to dismantle the wall of separation between church and state that the framers fought to build. In just a few years, the court has upended constitutional doctrine, shifting from a rule that permits states to decline to fund religious organizations to one that requires states, in many circumstances, to subsidize religious indoctrination with taxpayer dollars. And what I said earlier is entirely true. The framers of the Constitution were absolutely beside themselves to make sure that the government did not get tangled up in the various and sundry doctrines and dogmas and bizarre and twisted beliefs of the religion industry, and they were equally careful to make sure that religion was not polluted by secular government. And the only way to do that was to make sure, as much as humanly possible, that the two did not commingle. That was the original intent of the framers. And in this case, the original intent of the framers, otherwise known as originalism, well, the six punks and highwaymen and thugs, etc., took it out behind the barn and beat it to death with an old axe handle. So I can sit here and say, God, I don't ever want to hear the word originalism come out of another fucking Republican's mouth. And if it does, they need to be absolutely worn out with this decision. I mean, this isn't even close, y'all. There is not a cogent, logical, rational argument to be made that the framers of the Constitution wanted taxpayer monies, state monies, to go to support any religious institution. Is there an upside to this? Well, you might argue that there is. Once you take Caesar's nickel, you do Caesar's bidding. But no. Those Christian worldview churches that discriminate against the LGBTQ community and teach hate to little children? Well, we used to have the notion that if you took Caesar's nickel, you did Caesar's bidding. And under that doctrine, the government would be able to come in and say, well, you can't discriminate anymore. You can't do that. But this gang of aforementioned punks and thugs and vandals and highwaymen and footpads, well, they'll say, no, no, that is, telling them they can't hate
Well, they have religious liberty.
Sit, Liberty, sit.
They have religious liberty to hate all they want.
You're going down. You're going down a disturbing and terrifying road. Query asks Ron and Raleigh, are these religious schools tax-free? If they are, I'd file suit to have their tax-exempt status revoked. You can't have it both ways. One would think, Ron, but if you do that, these six punks, thugs, vandals, etc., will say, well, no. No, that would be discriminating against their religious liberty. See, it becomes a circular argument. You set up a principle that's not grounded in anything, and then you use that principle to argue that it would be discriminatory to... oh, God, it makes my head hurt. Well, that's kind of the rationale that the framers had, Lady B. Lady B says churches don't pay taxes. Why the hell should taxpayers be forced to fund their schools? Does this make sense to everybody but me? Why is this even a goddamned issue? Well, it's a goddamned issue because the punks, thugs, vandals, footpads, and cut purses and highwaymen were put on the court to do exactly this. They're not there to do justice. They are there to do theocracy. Somewhere, with a pineapple presently being rammed the hard way up his ass, Limbaugh is chuckling, going, ha, 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 my friends, ha, ha, so much for her slut medicine. And, oh, dear, I'm sorry, Lady B. Okay, we're parting ways, Lady B says. I like another Auld Lang Syne. I like Dan Fogelberg. I love The Power of Gold. Dislike Run for the Roses and Leader of the Band. Same, same. And I think I was just overexposed to another Auld Lang Syne, and maybe I kind of lived a little bit of it once, and I'm bitter. Best lyric from The Power of Gold on the fade-out, the women are lovely, the wine is superb, but there's something about this song that disturbs you. P.S. The cats outside had to stop and listen to see where the caterwauling was coming from. I told him it was just Robin Kincaid coming this close to me, throwing my phone out the window. Live, laugh, love. Live, laugh, love, Lady B. Traffic on the tens. Oh, I'm just loving that. It's living in my brain. It's a delight. But hang on to this case. Let's get the name of it again. Jot it down, maybe. Next time some Republican senator is braying about originalism in some goddamn, and let it be soon, confirmation hearing, remember the name Carson versus Macon, M-A-K-I-N, Carson versus Macon. Because you can at least scream at the TV or maybe even send an email saying, what about Carson versus Macon? 3X Marsha. Originalism didn't seem to count for fucking much there, did it? It's a fraud. It's always been a fraud. It will always be a fraud. And it seems that far too many people are too afraid to point out that it is, in fact, a fraud. Lady B, it's not the entire Dan Fogelberg oeuvre that, is that the right word, that I don't like. It's just that, okay, it makes me cry, all right? Same thing happens with, although I don't hold as much animus about it, Harry Chapin and Taxi. By the way, Tracy says, Merrick Garland ain't doing shit except for sitting around with his thumb up his ass. I wish I had some sort of evidence with which to disagree with you, Tracy. Yeah. Oh, and remember how yesterday we had the story of Eric Greitens and his bloodthirsty ad for his Senate campaign. Let me see if I can find that real quick. Now, this is the same Eric Greitens whose ex-wife says that he tortured the shit out of her. Just so we understand. Let me see if I can fast forward. Ah, there it is. He will be barking and grunting and hooting about our right to keep more bears.
I'm Eric Greitens, Navy SEAL, and today we're going rhino hunting. The rhino feeds on corruption and is marked by the stripes of cowardice.
You'll note the drum line there is meant to simulate the sound of automatic weapons fire as a gang of camoed up thugs busts in the door and Eric Greitens, Navy SEAL, walks into the smoke after they throw in a smoke grenade. Breathe it in, Eric, buddy. It's going to be good for you.
Join the MAGA crew. Get a rhino hunting permit. There's no bagging limit, no tagging limit, and it doesn't expire until we save our country.
I don't know about y'all, but that sure feels pretty stochastically terroristic to me. And apparently I'm not the only one. Oh, no. Because, let me find it here. Too many tabs. There it is. The leader, and he's a Republican, mind you. The majority leader of the Missouri State Senate. I'm sorry, the minority leader, according to a story from the Kansas City Star, in the wake of Eric Greitens releasing his rhino ad, encouraging people to go and, I guess, murder politicians with whom they disagree. Well, the Senate Majority Leader, Caleb Rowden, tweeted yesterday, "We've been in contact with the Missouri Highway Patrol and hope that former Governor Greitens finds the help he needs. Anyone with multiple accusations of abuse toward women and children should probably steer clear of this rhetoric." And guns! I mean, and guns, but I guess if he's the majority leader in the Missouri Senate, that means he's a Republican. That means he can't criticize the precious little guns. But remember, please, that in all too many cases where some white dude goes in and shoots up a place and murders a bunch of people, it is all too often found out that he's had a habit of abusing women and children in his past. And that's certainly the case with Eric Greitens. His mistress, you know, he's a Republican, believes in a marriage between one man and one woman, right? Well, back, hold on. Yeah, back when he was still a married man, Eric Greitens had a little flying. Had a little flying with a woman, and he tied her up, and he took photos of her, naked, tied up, and then he later said, you know, if you say anything, and so he tried to blackmail her with the goddamn pictures, and that caused his resignation as the governor of Missouri. And now he's got an inside track to be the Senate replacement for Roy Blunt of Missouri. And he later tweeted, "We've got our permit and we're coming for you." He sent that to Rowden. He sent that to Governor Mike Parson. His campaign manager, an amoral creep by the name of Dylan Johnson, said via Twitter, "Give me a break! This account obviously has nothing to do with Eric Greitens or the Team Greitens campaign." Well, nonetheless, the Missouri Highway Patrol has been contacted. Jesus, these people. I mean, do you think that somebody like Eric Greitens would go and murder if Donald Trump told him to? I mean, based on what the maggots did in places like Georgia and Arizona and Wisconsin, do you think if Donald Trump told someone to go and murder someone that someone would go and do it? Do you think, say, an Eric Greitens who specifically cited MAGA, you think he'd kill somebody for his God Emperor? Because I do. I sincerely do. Randy Radar pointing out, and as Kurt Vonnegut noted, 1.2 mistresses on the side. What does that come from? I don't recall that. Matt in San Francisco, in regard to the Supreme Court, says, "I know I'm not the only one who's concerned that in order for fascism to succeed, you need to pack the court. Republicans can check that box. What in God's name are the Dems going to do about it?" I know. We need more Democrats in office. How are we going to do that when the ones currently in office won't even change the rules to get anything done? While the Democratic Party's meeting and making political calculations, the Republicans are further dismantling everything that holds up the pillars of democracy. The Democratic Party should take one note from Cheney, be ruthless, and go for the jugular. If you're not willing to do that, get off the field." I know, Matt. And the problem remains what the problem is. We could solve a lot of these problems, except for a pair of allegedly Democratic senators by the name of Sinema and Joe of the Manchin Born. Because whatever the House decides to do, well, Mitch McConnell, who is the real leader of the Senate, will stop. Oh, and how many times, Ron and Raleigh asks, Merrick Garland is a member of the Federalist Society chosen by Orrin Hatch to be Barack Obama's SCOTUS pick. How many Federalists are on our side? Oh, and by the way, candidate Greitens is not a Navy SEAL. Can you say stolen valor? Well, I'll be dipped. How about that? And that, according to a fellow by the name of the Gunsplainer.
Hold back. Brought to you by Chesterfield Cigarettes. When one lung is enough.
That's a great line.
The Gunsplainer roamed the West, but only appeared to people after there was trouble.
Them Indians just came out of nowhere.
Well,
thank God nobody's hurt.
They attacked our wagon train with Winchesters.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Huh?
What?
Where'd you come from?
Those weren't Winchesters.
What?
You know, used by the Redskins.
Excuse me?
Native Americans. The rifle used by the Radicals was the Colt Burgess Rifle, also known as the 1883 Burgess Rifle, a lever-action repeating rifle, which, although utilizing the same .44-40 Winchester cartridge...
Oh, we need some help here, mister.
...has an octagonally shaped 650-millimeter barrel, and actually a stronger action design than the Winchester.
Is anybody going to help?
Because it has a toggle joint system to lock the breech block, and the extension of the loading lever.
Oh, forget it, Mary.
The Gunsplainer.
People don't know. They just don't know. They have no idea.
By the way, who was that balding, overweight, middle-aged man? I wanted to smack him.
That was the Gunsplainer.
Stay tuned now for Have Gun, Will Troll.
I don't know exactly what that was or what that had to do with Eric Greitens being not a real Navy SEAL, but it was cute as hell. Okay. No, it's not God Bless You, Mr. Goldwater. the Vonnegut book. Rosewater. God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, Randy. Yeah. So we are halfway through the evening's program. We've got, we're started on knocking down. We've got a good start on knocking down the deficit. Thank you to Ralphs for the challenge, and thanks to those of you who responded. So, there's something just short of four programs yet to be funded to get us up to current. And if we can keep that going, that'll be great. Darlene in Connecticut said, my town received some distinction the other day. The Board of Selectmen held a brief ceremony at their meeting 2 weeks ago to raise the pride flag over the town hall sign for the first time ever. It looked rather pretty flapping in the breeze today, and in no time at all they went there. The maggot repegs in my town went there. At the following Board of Selectmen meeting last week, the Republican maggot stood up and demanded that the pride flag be taken down post-haste, because what if someone wants to fly a Nazi flag or an ISIS flag? Yep, finally happened, and maybe my town's the first to do it, to equate the pride flag with the Nazi flag. So we got some pretty bad press in at least one of the state's major newspapers, and deservedly so. As such, the best-kept secret of what a completely racist, homophobic, bigoted, Republican-dominated town this has been, is, remains, and most likely forever will be, is finally like a cat being let out of the bag. I'm unsure if my disgust is overshadowed by my embarrassment that this is where I live, that this is where I chose to live before I gained political sensibility. And don't even get me started on the affordable housing controversy that's been raging here for years. We're learning a little bit about affordable housing controversies here in general greater Fayetteville Co-Prosperity Metroplex zone. It ain't to be had. But oddly enough, you are not alone, Darlene. I got too many tabs open. Where is it? There it is. Not too far from you, up in Massachusetts. That's the southern pronunciation. There's up in Massachusetts, there's a Catholic school called the Nativity School in Worcester. A few years back, I learned how to pronounce that. Worcester. It was tuition-free. It's a middle school. And it serves as a school for boys who are dealing with economic hardship. It's a Catholic school. And out of a sense of inclusivity, the Nativity School of Worcester, earlier this year, ran up the flagpole, the Black Lives Matter flag, and the rainbow flag of pride, the LGBTQ flag. Well, it wasn't a problem for the students. Wasn't a problem for the people running the school. Oh, but it was a problem for Bishop Robert McManus, a dude who wears a dress. I gotta say, I'm a lot cuter in a dress, but never mind, I'm working at it. He's not. Bishop Robert McManus said, the black... I love it when white people say things like this. No, I don't. The Black Lives Matter flag has been co-opted by some factions which also instill broad brush distrust of police. And after all, if you are at all aware of the history of child sexual abuse by the Roman Catholic Church in Massachusetts, you know that the police have long been an ally of priests who like to bugger little boys. And he went on to say that the LGBTQ flag could be used to contrast church teaching that marriage is between a man and a woman. The flying of these flags in front of a Catholic school sends a mixed, confusing, and scandalous message to the public about the church's stance on these important moral and social issues. Despite my insistence that the school administration remove these flags because of the confusion and the properly theological scandal that they do and can promote, they refuse to do so. In other words, the administration of Nativity School of Wista refused to be fucking bigots and racists, like their bishop is. What a turd. So, the bishop has ruled that they can no longer celebrate Mass or the sacraments at Nativity School of Wista. And they can't use diocesan institutions to raise money. And last week when their list of Catholic schools in the region went out, Nativity School of Wista was not on it. So good on you, Bishop. You've made sure that all the kids, all the little boys who go to Nativity School of Wista probably won't grow up good Catholics. Little golf clap for the bishop. Now, on the other hand, Nativity School said that they ran the Black Lives Matter flag and the Pride flags up the flagpole because their students wanted it. Why? Because most of the students at Nativity School are students of color. They wanted the Black Lives Matter flag as an indication that the greater Worcester community could be more inclusive. President of the school, Thomas McKinney, said, "Both flags are now widely understood to celebrate the human dignity of our relatives, friends, and neighbors who have faced and continue to face hate and discrimination. Though any symbol or flag can be co-opted by political groups or organizations, flying our flags is not an endorsement of any organization or ideology. They fly in support of marginalized people." You know, Jesus-y stuff. And, of course, the bishop of this House of Whoville hat, the bishop, says that, no, the Black Lives Matter movement has used the phrase to contradict Catholic teaching on the importance of the nuclear family. One alumnus of Nativity School, Guillermo Creamer Jr., said, "For these young men who are witnessing what's happening around the country and seeing the Black Lives Matter flag fly, it's a very big deal." And pointed out that as a result of the bishop's ruling, other Catholic schools may distance themselves from social justice for the black community. And in bold opposition, Mr. McKinney said, wrote a letter to the community. He said, "We're going to keep doing business as usual. We're going to keep flying the flags because this school is funded by individuals and groups, not by the diocese that Bishop McManus is running into the ground. I added into the ground." Little moments of courage mean something. And I'm sorry about your town, Darlene. It's
It's depressing, isn't it? Well, I'm going to take a quick break because it's Tuesday, and that means we've got the Green News Report. So let's find out what Brad and Desi have for today. I'll be right back. Y'all don't go anywhere, okay?
June 21, 2022.
The mercury is rising all across Western Europe.
Extreme heat in Europe smashes records, sparks wildfires, and water rationing. Severe U.S. heat wave killed thousands of cattle. Plus,
madness is coming, and all we can do is try to prepare for it as best we can.
Right-wing Supreme Court majority poised to hand down the most consequential environmental ruling in decades.
All of those consequences and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The things that we're starting to see now become much worse, and we get extremes that we haven't even seen before.
It's gonna get worse?
Much worse.
Who asked you? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, sweltering heat in Europe, here in the U.S., cattle dying, people dying. This is not good.
No, it most definitely is not, and it is very unusual. In Europe, an historic heat wave is blanketing Europe from London to the Mediterranean, with temperatures 20 to 30 degrees above normal, shattering all-time temperature records for the month of June and sparking wildfires in Spain, Germany, and France. Southern France hit a record high of 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
The extreme heat is impacting electricity generation in southern France, where several nuclear plants were already offline after widespread corrosion problems were discovered in critical systems. France 24 reports that other nuclear plants have also been forced to curtail output because rivers that are used to cool the nuclear reactors are warming earlier and faster than normal.
So the river water is too hot to cool the nuclear power plant.
Yes.
Not good.
In Italy, the heat and historic drought have triggered a water crisis. Parts of northern Italy have seen no rain for more than 3 months, wilting crops and reducing output from hydroelectric dams. But worse, Italy's largest river, the legendary Po River, is literally drying up. Towns in the north have begun water rationing. Mm. But a bit of better news, Europe also set new records for solar power production. In Germany, solar supplied more than 60% of its electricity in the height of the heat wave.
So there's that.
It's the opposite situation in India and Bangladesh, where army troops have been called out to rescue thousands of people stranded by deadly floods. An unusually intense monsoon dumped more than 3 feet of rain in 24 hours.
3 feet of rain in 24 hours?
Yes. Nearly 120 people are confirmed killed by floods and landslides as we go to air. Millions of homes are underwater, and this latest round of catastrophic flooding comes less than a month after extreme rainfall submerged entire towns. Studies show that climate change increases the odds of extreme weather events like droughts and deluges. Climate scientists warn that the unusually early arrival of extreme heat is a sign of what is to come with man-made climate change, with temperatures from August moving up the calendar to June.
With what is to come from man-made climate change? I would say it's already here.
Here in the U.S., officials in Kansas say the sudden onset of intense heat last week killed at least 2,000 cattle. In southern Arizona, firefighters have saved the precious telescopes at the Kitt Peak National Observatory from the massive Contreras fire. It's just one of several major fires fueled by the excessive heat and dry conditions in the Southwest. In other news, the American Medical Association has issued a new statement declaring climate change a public health crisis that, quote, threatens the health and well-being of all people.
Good.
The new policy specifically mobilizes the AMA to advocate for policies that limit global warming to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius and will help the U.S. cut emissions to reach carbon neutrality by 2050. And finally, a heads up. The right-wing U.S. Supreme Court majority is poised to hand down what could be an incredibly consequential environmental ruling. West Virginia versus EPA is a lawsuit brought by Republican attorneys general over a coal pollution rule that never went into effect. It is a pretext in Republicans' years-long scheme to get the court to strip the EPA of authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. In 2008, the court ruled that the EPA can and must regulate climate pollution, but the new right-wing supermajority may break precedent with long-reaching consequences that could curtail all future pollution regulations. Slate court reporter Mark Joseph Stern on a recent broadcast warned,
"How could it possibly be that the Supreme Court will rule on a regulation that does not yet exist, that may in fact never exist?" And the answer is that the usual rules about actually taking a live controversy do not seem to apply when the conservative supermajority really wants to kneecap the Biden administration's regulatory agenda.
Right. Nothing has changed except the makeup of the corrupted, stolen, and packed U.S. Supreme Court. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I could name that song in the first couple of notes. Yeah. So here we are, Titanic Tuesday on the horn for the 21st day of June 2022, and first day of summer. What is it? Why is it? Why is it the first day of summer makes me feel a little sad for the shortening of days? It happens that way every year. First day of summer comes around, and I'm like, oh, fuck, I'll be freezing in no time. So I don't get to look forward to the lengthening of days until the winter solstice? Maybe that means I need to get a better, I don't know, a better attitude about winter? Yeah, who knows? Well, listen, this is Conversation Radio, and if you want to engage in some, feel free to pick up the phone. Both lines are open. The stress line's open, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And the Skype line's open, and, of course, the direct dial for that is 304-574-8178. Oh, and how about that? I didn't realize such a thing existed, but I'm glad that it does. Just got a note from Joey. This is for the longest day of the year, the first day of the summer. The summer solstice is also National Giraffe Day, so named for the longest animal in the world. Well, I mean, maybe tallest. I mean, isn't it great blue whale of long? Isn't it, but oh, well. $10 challenge for National Giraffe Day brought to you by Joey to the kangaroo, Jeffrey and Junior. So, that challenge is on the table, and that would get us down to, if that's met, that would get us down to 1160? Yeah. Which would mean that we had made up an entire day's program. We started at 1460, we'd be down to 1160. That's one full day's programming that we would have covered, and that's fan-freaking-tastic. I'm going to give you a gnur, a chuckle. Because it's cute. Randy Radar says, a priest, an imam, and a rabbit walk into a bar. The bartender asks the rabbit, what'll you have? And the rabbit says, I don't know. I'm just here because of autocorrect. Damn it. That's such a computer era joke. You know, there's still. I think this evening, being the solstice, maybe I'll go outside and make a little fire. Just to take note of the auspicious day. Well, let's run over and check in with Flavio. Hey, Flavio, how in the world are you?
Hey, how are you, Robin?
Happy solstice.
Happy solstice and happy winter solstice to our friends in Australia. And
to our, yes, to our Antipodean friends.
In the Antipodes, yeah.
And this is probably the only radio show on in the United States where the word Antipodean has been used.
Exactly.
It's our job here. No, our job here, Flavio.
I'm glad to hear you. Yeah, I'm just kind of I'm kind of blue. and I don't know, man. I should say, girl.
I wasn't gonna say anything, but thanks for the thanks for the skate save.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Jesus. We're in a bad way because the way I see it, you know, I live in southwestern Wisconsin in a progressive city, but I know that if I go out in the country, they're all maggots, you know.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate to live in the city, you know, and the city's got, you know, three universities, a technical college, you know.
Well, you know, we're going to you know each other to death, but a long time ago now, I had the pleasure and the honor of toddling around rural Wisconsin with my dear friend Bruce. God, I miss him. And he, you know, he basically took me to upper Midwest school. And so we were driving around out among all this exquisite Wisconsin farmland, and we'd drive by a farm with a Scott Walker sign in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And he'd say, "You see there, Bob? You see there? You know what that is?" And I said, "No, Bruce, I don't know." He'd say, "What you got there, Bob? You got a Wisconsin dairy farmer who's got enough money to jingle in his pocket that he thinks he's a Republican now. And he doesn't understand that they'll take every last damn dime from him the first minute they get the inkling to do so."
Yeah, they're not very bright. But I blame our side for not being able to communicate very well at all.
Well, you know, it's that eternal Strother Martin problem from Cool Hand Luke, isn't it? Yep, there I go. I've lost all the millennials now. What we have here is failure to communicate.
Yeah. Yeah, because
But okay, hold on, because I want to do a little processing here, because you're very good at that, Flavio. Just a moment ago, you said, "Yeah, they're not that bright," and I kind of agreed. And isn't that the essence of the problem on our side? We start out from a position of thinking they're just a bunch of dim bulbs, and what they need is smart us to tell them how to think.
Well, we're simplistic, too, on our side, because we're so secure, or so we think, in our beliefs, that we think we can communicate them, that we can't, because we were kind of ivory tower, and there's a problem there. The one who has been able to do that, to greater or lesser extent, I think Bernie Sanders does a good job of communicating our side, but they don't, you know, take someone, a Californian like Adam Schiff, you know.
Yeah.
Adam Schiff is, I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, you know, probably have a glass of wine with him, you know, but I don't know he drinks beer, but you know what I mean?
Well, I do, but I never got the sense from Adam Schiff that he was some sort of raging elitist.
No, but...
I mean, he was very careful today to point out that the Republicans who were there were doing the patriotic thing, that they were doing their patriotic duty, that they were doing honor to their oath.
But they come off as kind of dissent to somebody, say, in rural Wisconsin. You know, because of their, I don't know, their diction, their demeanor. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there. I'm brainstorming here. I'm trying to understand why the Republicans have been so successful in poisoning the well, and we haven't been as successful as unpoisoning it. I don't know. Maybe poison is better? I don't know. More effective? I don't know. Maybe we should adopt a meaner demeanor?
I really think that we are trapped within our own, and please, you know, don't take this in the wrong spirit. We are in a trick box that was built for us. I will never say anything other, because I believe it all the way down to the ground. I mean, my toenail clippings believe this. The split ends of my hair believe this. Top to bottom, full breadth, all the way to my core. I am convinced that a woman's right to choose is absolutely non-negotiable. And I even take the radical position of saying abortion is not a question that should be in any wise touched in any form by any degree of government lawmaking. And I will not negotiate that. That's what non-negotiable means, Flavia. But I also recognize that as long as I hold that position, I'm at odds with probably the majority of the people in my state. Some of whom are Democrats, some of whom are Republicans, and some of whom are independents. On the other hand, as a Democrat, I also think that, at least according to the Heller decision, as authored by Fat Dead Tony, that reasonable and rational regulations on the ownership of firearms is certainly within the purview of governance and of governments relative to the Second Amendment. Well, Fat Dead Tony is also largely at odds with a majority of people, Democrats, Republicans, and independents in my state. And that's a trick box. Because you can't get out. It's a trick box for liberals, progressives, Democrats.
No, what I was saying was, can we develop our own rhetoric? Because they have their Mike Rufo's, they have their, is it Mike Rufo?
Christopher.
How's that? Chris Rufo.
Yeah, Christopher Rufo.
Yeah, and they have their Chris Rufo's, they have their Dan Luntz. Is Dan Luntz?
Frank.
Frank Luntz, sorry. Frank Luntz. I used to think Frank Luntz was evil. And Frank Luntz has got nothing on Chris Rufo. Absolutely nothing.
No, they're running evil university. and the next generation is always a little more evil than the one before it.
I mean, yeah, Chris Ruffo is just like, wow. I thought, like I said,
he wants, yeah, Ruffo wants schools to raise up a generation of vicious, intolerant little racists, and he calls that MRCA.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought Frank Luntz was the aim, you know, remember Amoral Yoda?
Yeah.
I'm going back to Samantha Bee. Remember Samantha Bee did that mashup with Frank Luntz? That was so great. It was on The Daily Show. Or no, it was on The Daily Show? Where she compares Frank Luntz to your own amoral Yoda.
Yeah, I remember that. That was good.
That was awesome. And but then comes,
yeah, like Darth Yoda.
Yeah, yeah, and then comes Chris Ruffo, and you're like blown away. But can we get some teeth in our side like that? You know what I mean. Can we sharpen our rhetoric to point out to the rubes that they're being had?
Some people try.
They're being sodomized and they don't know it.
I mean, you know? This is local to my state, but there's going to be a constitutional amendment on the ballot in November, Amendment 1, and basically it's going to gut the property tax structure in this state. Now, the property tax structure in the state largely goes to support county schools, county school systems, county government services, that sort of thing. And I guarantee you that the maggots will turn out and scurry from behind the baseboards in their goddamn droves. To go and approve that amendment, and a couple of years later, they'll be looking around, going, well, "Why the hell didn't the fire department show up? My house done burnt down." Well, Cletus, you went and you killed property taxes in West Virginia.
We can't our side ramp it up to point it out to them that you're being had? I mean, there has to
yeah,
be.
But that costs money.
Am I naive here? Because I mean, most people.
Well, I mean, we could. They're brilliant. They're brilliant. Flavio,
wait up. I'm being naive here. I would think most people, when you point out to them, you're being had. They go, "Oh shit, I'm being had."
Do they?
That's what I thought, you know? I thought that...
Well, but we live in a time now when you say, hey, you're being had, they say, but I'm being had for Jesus!
Hmm.
I mean, I'm oversimplifying, but the bottom line is, there are plenty of people who message very, very well, but they don't have any money to get it out. The megaphone costs money. Look at how we scramble to just keep this thing on the air, and we're not... and. You get the point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wish our side would get the money in it.
One of the, you know, the personal is political, okay. And it was a lot easier. You know, there was a time, and it's replicated in a few places. Jim Clyburn, for instance, down in South Carolina, throws a fish fry every year. And it's huge, and it's a big deal to go to Jim Clyburn's fish fry and speak. I mean, basically, it was Jim Clyburn's fish fry that saved Joe Biden's presidential campaign in 2020.
Oh yeah.
Those moments of retail politics are extremely effective, but we don't really do them anymore. I tried to do a couple on a very low-key basis in my little campaign. I didn't have much money. But I took a big old pan full of barbecue over to Maggie's, and people ate it and enjoyed it, and we all talked and we jawed. And that kind of politics works, but it doesn't seem... I think the UMWA still throws its big Labor Day due down in Racine.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into a matter of messaging. What message do you want to send with all of that? And
I think we still have Fighting Bob Fest in Madison.
I hope that's still going. I mean, the guy who really made it something got sick several years ago, and I don't know who he passed it on to. I hope it's still a going concern.
Yeah, that always brings out everybody.
But we need more of that.
We need more of that. That's what I was thinking. It's like
Because, press the flesh, meet people, stand and talk. And if you're a politician who actually likes people, who lives for the conversation, people will figure that out, and you can get the message across. I mean, that at least has to be our hope. I mean, look, we can talk about abortion with people who oppose abortion.
Okay, yeah, why not? Yeah.
And we can say things like, listen, I understand you oppose it. Please don't ever have one. And, of course, when you say that, you're usually saying it to some grumpy, pasty-faced, doughy old white dude.
And explain to them that, in countries like Northern Europe, where they have regular sex education, contraception.
Oh, I know where you're going, but I think that's a loser, Flavio. Because the minute you say Northern Europe, and see here I'm doing it again, but we're just letting our hair down and talking amongst ourselves. There's nobody listening.
And they're just as they're high church Lutherans,
right? But Flavio, they don't want to hear Northern Europe. They can't find Northern Europe on a map, and most of them haven't been, in my case, to Northern West Virginia.
What I'm saying is that. If you could explain to them, well, without saying Northern Europe, but there are countries where they fund sex education, where they fund, healthcare services, where they fund childcare, where they actually don't need abortions. Where the abortion rate is very low.
But you're going back to the Clinton era of making it safe, accessible, and rare. That was that was the talking point from the Clinton administration: safe, accessible, and rare, or safe, available, and rare. Emphasis on rare.
No, it's not often. What I'm saying is. You go to countries like France, and maybe educate people a little bit that fertility isn't everything. And that most developed countries, when you become developed, you have less children. And that's okay. That's third world countries are the ones that you have, six kids in tow, 12 kids in tow, because you figure, four of them are going to die, before they reach puberty or whatever, because they're not going to make it, because, they're going to die of childhood diseases and shit, because they live in the third world, but in developed countries, birth rates decline, because of progress, because of development, because of
Well, I think you're kind of underappreciating the the American religious mindset, because the American religious mindset is nothing like whatever the religious mindset is that remains in Europe. This is the religion that is the offshoot of Calvinism in this country, and even if you're not Calvinist, maybe you're Catholic, and at the very base level of your being, there's this be fruitful and multiply and cover the planet and humans notion.
Yeah, and that's just not the way it works.
Most of Christianity at one level or another is a giant screaming hypocrisy. But it's more so when it's the American version. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but some folks, the Southern Baptist Convention, they had an absolute purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy recently because a black pastor addressed the Southern Baptist Convention meeting, and I mean, he set loose a firestorm.
He called him out.
A preacher named Kevin Smith from Family Church in Palm Beach, former executive director of the Baptist Convention of Maryland, Delaware, spoke on the first day of the Southern Baptist Convention General Convention and said some of the ministers there had lost their minds after Barack Obama was elected president. He said, "I think some Southern Baptists lost their minds when a black man was elected president. Not all, but some. I think some Southern Baptists were unloving to black people beginning in 2012 with the killing of Trayvon Martin. I don't mean agree about politics or policy. I mean just giving a darn that somebody else is hurting who is supposed to be your brother or sister in Christ. And I think some Southern Baptists just bent over and became political whores with this whole Trump stuff."
Yep.
And
yeah,
then
that was great.
And then they lost their shit. In fact, I've got the clip here. Let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh wait, nope, wrong. Gonna have to find it on the other machine. Won't take but a second.
I miss calling in. I don't always have anything original to contribute. But.
No, you always bring a good conversation to the table. Here it is. And this way you'll be able to hear it, and we'll all be able to hear it. Yay.
Cool.
Here we go.
That's it, Tom. Yep, Kevin.
Oh, my, the audio is terrible and echoey.
The audio is terrible, yeah.
Baptists.
But you can summarize it, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, and after he said that they bent over for Trump, the entire collective room lost their shit.
They hooed him and...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, wow. No, but I mean...
Let's see if we can pick up a little bit of it.
Where I've got a safe place to process, and I wasn't really aware of that. But not really embraced. I'm not talking about me. I've been here 30 years, so I got true friendships with people in their 20s that have been here 30 years. So I just want to know what my brothers think about where the race thing is in this. I don't know about the SBC, but I know pastoring in Atlanta is more discouraging today than it was when I arrived 14 years ago. And over the last 4 years, we've had South African American brothers.
And meanwhile, this is all going on at the same time that the Southern Baptist Convention has been stone cold busted for having a rapey problem.
A rapey problem, yeah, exactly. Just like the church, the Catholic Church. I'm not very religious these days. I mean, I was raised Catholic, but I kind of like the ecumenical spirit of Pope Francis, you know?
Yeah.
The kind of like the fact that the American Catholic Church is being, is coming out as fascist as Cardinal Spellman in the 50s. Holy shit.
Well, Cardinal Spellman and, you know, go back to Father Coughlin.
Father Coughlin, yeah. And, yeah, so I'm, you know, look, La Crosse has some of the most radical right-wing Catholics. Remember that priest in the north side?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Good God, what is his face? I forget his name now, but he was so radical that the local bishop banished him.
Yeah, he was a real jackass.
He was a piece of work. But that's unfortunately, that's, you know, years of Fox News and Rush Limbaugh, and, you know, that's all these people listen to. We have no equivalent. I wish we did. Where did we go wrong?
Well, I mean, we got Tom Hartman, right?
We let the AM spectrum go. What the hell?
Yeah, but that's.
I remember when AM radio.
We didn't
was
let
so cool.
the Flavio. We didn't let the AM spectrum go. The owners of AM licenses let the AM spectrum go. That's never been us.
We never bought up the stuff, but they did. They bought everything. They bought everything. You know, like you said, a trucker
can be going across state lines and they don't.
What is his name? The one that took over Rush Limbaugh. Is that Bongino?
Oh, yeah. I always think Bon Jovi, but that's because I'm
Bon Jovi's a nice guy.
Yeah. Right, no.
Bongino is evil.
Yeah. I can't remember Dave or Tom or, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I actually remember when Sandra Rush went after Sandra Fluke. I was so incensed that I actually paraded in front of the local AM station.
Well, good on you.
Protesting, and they called the cops.
Really?
Little band. Yeah, they called the cops because we paraded in front of their window, saying shame on you, you know, and yeah. That was kind of scary, you know, because I was like, the cop actually followed me into my apartment building.
Okay, that's creepy.
Yeah, that is creepy. So you know where the cops stand, but and he said, you know, the next time they do that, I'm going to take you in. yeah, I probably shouldn't be protesting. But that, yeah. And this is a putatively liberal city, right?
You're right.
At least to an extent. But you can't protest against the AM station that spews hatred 24/7, you know. By the way, it's called Midwest Family Broadcasting. Family, y'all.
Definitely family. Oh, by the way, Brother Deacon, Brother Deacon Asa had a note for you back when you were talking about, can't we just explain to them that they're being had? And Flavio, Asa said, you're wrong, Flavio. It's easier to fool a man than it is to convince him that he's been fooled. Because, and I think Brother Deacon Asa has a point there insofar as once you fooled somebody, even if they know they've been fooled, they have a human inclination to cling to it, because otherwise they would have to admit that they were conned. And to admit that you've been conned is to admit that you are capable of being conned. It all goes back to...
It's kind of like that situation in The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg.
Yeah, and it's also directly related to the first commandment of W.C. Fields. You can't cheat an honest man. If you go and you look at the rise of Trump, you see that in bold relief. Honest people didn't fall for Trump. The people who fell for Trump and continue to support Trump are people who either had their biases confirmed and their prejudices elevated, or they are people who bought into the big lie, bought into the con, and the big lie isn't just what happened in 2020. The big lie was his entire presidency. You know, the Mexicans streaming across the border.
The big, beautiful wall. It's going to be big. It's going to be beautiful. Believe me.
They wanted to be conned. Even after they figured out they were being conned, they wanted to be conned some more because it felt good. They got, and I keep going back to this one Pink Floyd lyric, they got the warm thrill of confusion, that space cadet glow.
Yeah. Wow. True.
Yeah, and you know, and far away across the field, the tolling of the iron bell calls the faithful to their knees to hear the softly spoken magic spell. I mean, there's a lot there.
There is, but I keep wondering, where are we in this? Where's our side? What can we do?
Well, our side has all the facts and figures, Flavio, and what we need is a good quality, fair and equal tax plan, and we've got the numbers right here. And I stole that directly from my favorite political novel, All the King's Men. And somebody explains to Willie Stark, people don't want to hear that. Their eyes roll back in their head. Their eyes glaze over. They want to hear you say that you're going to soak the fat man and take the axe handle to him. And that's what Trump said. Only it turns out the people he hated were not, you know, were not the corpulent, bloated blackguards of Wall Street. Those were his pals. He, by God, was going to put the hurt on those others who were keeping America from being goddamn great.
I'm taken back to the early days when he was campaigning. And all he had to do is, you know, tell the audience to you know, he had to sick the audience on the...
Yeah, he's a toxic boob, but he did know how to. But being a sociopath, he knows how to manipulate people. And so he was not wrong when he said, "I could shoot somebody in the middle.
I could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and never lose a vote."
Five people died on January 6th, and he is still a contender for 2024.
It blows my mind to this day. I mean,
but I mean, look at the history of your native Brazil. Does it really blow your mind?
Bolsonaro, I guess he doesn't blow my mind. Half of Brazil is like Bolsonaro. Evil, skeevy, mean, petty.
Don't leave out vicious.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot in common, Brazil and the United States. Brazil had slavery longer than the United States, up to 1888.
Right.
When it was finally abolished, when slavery was finally abolished. We didn't have a civil war. And then eventually they opened up immigration, European immigration and Japanese immigration, and so you know, to make up for the lack of workers in the coffee fields and but Brazil to this day, I mean, is very racist. I never understood this myth of the racial paradise.
Right.
That was something that was promoted by the military dictatorship after 64. It never really was a thing in Brazil. Brazil is a very racist country. It's like South Africa. Are you kidding me? You know. I mean, I grew up with, you know, seeing the racism up close, you know.
Right.
The way they treat black people in Brazil is just, is, could be in the south of the United States the same way. You know, it's,
well, and then Brazil has its own sordid, blood-soaked history of how they treat indigenous people. You just got a note from Jude in the Great Northwest. She says, Flavio's quiet, reflective tone is calming. He offers his well of probing to the conversation. Be well.
Oh, thank you, Jude. No, but I'm disgusted with Brazil. I mean, I hope it. I guess the election is in October. But I don't know. It's touch and go right now. I mean, Bolsonaro may win again. It's because they like his brand. They like his brand.
Yeah, the cruelty is the point. It's just like Trump. It's just like, what's his fucking Hungary? And it was the same with Duterte in the Philippines, and now we get Imelda Marcos's kid over there.
Yeah, he's gonna go after the F word. You know, he's gonna go after the homosexuals. You know, and the. He's going to go after the trans people, and he's going to go after, yeah, he's going to put them in their place, and black people, too.
You know? Yeah. Because
and
freedom.
That sickens me. That sickens me. That you know, because Brazil, there's a lot of good people down there. It's like, you know, the people that say, okay, yeah, Texas should secede. I got friends there. I got dear friends there who moved
there.
Yeah,
what of John Britovo? What of John Britovo?
Britovo. I got dear friends there. That
what of my pal Doctor? Yeah, what of my pal Dr. Allen?
What are they gonna do, you know? I don't want them to leave, you know. I got friends in Arkansas. You know.
Think about, I mean, All my lovely sisters and brothers and non-binaries down in South Alabama. I mean, you want to talk about brave people?
Brave people.
They are living in a state of siege.
Daily, yeah. So you know that I don't subscribe to. Oh, let them secede. No, I don't. Because there's so many good people down there. You know, so many decent.
And you know, there's something that comes with being from somewhere, Flavio. A sense of place. I mean, you were writing at the beginning of the program when I was sort of just kidding about, you know, I guess I could move. I mean, they got some hills in northern Minnesota. It's kind of bluish.
No.
And blue is what color I would be after, you know, the first couple of months of a northern Minnesota winter.
I'm used to it. I'm Portuguese. We go, you know, my stock goes up to the Arctic to fish for cod, so.
Yeah, Prince Henry and all of that, sure.
No, really, I am pasty white. I have a sister that can tan, but I keep telling her, don't do that. That's bad for your skin.
You know, when I was running around outside getting ready for the horn in, I actually got a little color on my arms and my shoulders. I blistered and I peeled, but it's still a little bit darker than it
was
to begin
with. That's all I do. All I do is blister and peel, and that's not good. That means melanoma. You don't want that.
Yeah, no, that's significant damage.
You want to avoid that. So now when I go outside, I wear SPF 500 and.
But you know, your mom and dad picked your family up bag and baggage, left Brazil, came here, and you've seen a significant.
Because we were leaving a dictatorship.
Yeah. And I guess that's what people in a secession or in a sec deed, remember sec D, in a sec deed Texas, I guess that's what other people would be doing. They'd be fleeing. They'd be fleeing a bloody vicious dictatorship.
It was, and my mom, you know, my dad tried to make it happen, you know, but you know, when things weren't happening, my mom said it's either Brazil or me, and Dad said okay,
out of here. Yeah, good man. But I mean, I would, you know, if I had to leave. There's a lot to recommend, and I get a kick.
I had so many good friends. I had so many friends. You don't know how much I cried when I left Brazil. I bawled.
You know, I think of all my progressive friends in Stan states. I mean, I think I got a story here. The guy that our pal David in South Carolina, Stan, refers to as McGovna. His name's McMaster.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he hasn't already, he's going to sign a bill, H-4776, coming out of the South Carolina Stan legislature, and they call it the Medical Rights of Conscience.
Jesus.
And it codifies religious bigotry against people that Christians don't like. So that, if a doctor,
that's a long list.
Yeah, well, if a doctor doesn't like the fact that you're a homosexual in a South Carolina style, he can say, well, I ain't gonna treat your gay ass. Well, I'm gonna do it because Jesus don't want me doing it. I got deeply held religious convictions to prevent me from treating you for your homosexual lifestyle, broken leg.
Yeah, that's a long list, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think about David in South Carolina, Stan, and I think about Todd. And you know, do we just say, well, you know, I mean, too bad for you.
That is in Georgia. Right?
Yeah, Malloy in Georgia.
Malloy in Georgia.
I mean, I think we even got a couple of listeners in Mississippi, Stan. Used to have some in Louisiana, Stan. Got several in Texas, Stan. Friends in Oklahoma, Stan.
Yeah.
And no, you know, and the fact of the matter is, I'm too old. There's so much to recommend me going somewhere else if I had the way to do it.
This is the United States.
But I would pine.
The United States is under siege.
I could look at the beautiful mountains of Colorado every day and I'd say, ain't West Virginia. Ain't Appalachia. I could go to the Appalachians of Vermont and still, you know, shit, I thought West Virginia was cold in the winter. I don't think it's ever going to warm up here.
No. You don't know cold.
Oh, I have experienced the cold of the Wisconsin Northwoods, so don't act like I have no experience.
Okay. All right. No, but you haven't experienced cold until you went ice fishing and you had to wear, you know.
Well, now there's something else for me to take into account. I mean, can you be cute dressed for ice fishing? If you can't be cute doing it, I don't do it.
No.
I've become very vain.
No. You gotta bundle up.
Yeah, you're just gonna be dowdy and frumpy out there ice fishing. So I don't know. Somebody else gonna have to catch my walleye.
Yeah, no.
I'll be back in the warm cabin making the tartar sauce that ain't nobody ever up there ever had, except a very select few to whom I gave the recipe.
No, but I damn near froze my tush off, and I gotta say, I was pretty insulated, and yet. You know, the frozen main channel, you know, when it freezes over. And, wow. I never experienced that much cold until I was ice fishing. It was fun, though. Didn't catch anything, but I could see.
But you sat in the ice fishing hut and you drank straight from the bottle of a fifth of cheap brandy and you had a wonderful old time.
Exactly. I drank wasn't innocent.
Well, you know that old Christian aphorism, right?
What?
Give a man a fish and you fed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, and you've given him an excuse to sit by the river and drink beer for the rest of his life. Flavio, I got to roll here because I got another call to get to.
All right. Well, you take care of you.
All right, I will. Flavio, be good. It's always a pleasure, my friend.
I love you.
Love you too. Wear your sunscreen.
Yeah, SPF 500.
Yep. Yeah, SPF Avogadro's number or something. Right. Yep.
Avogadro. Take good care.
All right. Later now. Our buddy Flavio calling from Progressive, Wisconsin. Homosexual, Matt in San Francisco writes, for all those that want to shoot me in the back of the head, look, I have a problem with sectional sofas and wagon wheel coffee tables, but you don't see me campaigning to shoot people who have them in the head. I know. I've never understood the right wing's problem with sectional furniture for human beings, but it's one of those great mysteries of the universe, Matt. It just is. So we are closing in on the end of the program, and we are down at where did I say 11:60 a.m. on your a.m. dial. 11:60 to go, and all the help is good help. Thanks to everybody who's jumped in this evening. Let's run over to the stress line, where I am informed that Randy Radar awaits. Are you there, Randy?
Yeah, I just want to get the short old comment in. I emailed you this before, but I'm not sure I heard back. You can tell all the white wingers that if they vote for Democrats, they don't have to go against their religious edicts and commit suicide when they're 58 years old, and they go medically back. Yeah.
Your anti-abortion law is trouncing our religious rights. And it was like, because I've been hollering about the First Amendment aspects of these goddamn religious laws, the religious abortion laws, for well over a decade, and it's like somebody finally got a damn clue.
That's interesting, but wasn't there a call a couple of nights ago who said that the Cubans and the Jewish people basically run Florida?
I think that was Scary Jerry, yeah.
Was he correct?
I'm uncomfortable with broad statements like that, but it is absolutely true that the demographics of Florida, or South Florida especially, there's a strong Jewish voting bloc. And there's a very strong Cuban voting bloc, but the Cuban voting bloc is changing and evolving because, you know, they don't have the same, they don't have quite the same hard on for the cash, because, you know, they're living a pretty nice life in South Florida, and they don't get all misty-eyed thinking about the tobacco fields of Cuba anymore, like their parents and grandparents did. North Florida, well, you know, there's a reason that they call parts of the panhandle of Florida Lower Alabama.
Okay, but, like, how can Governor DeSantis piss off both Disney World and the Jewish population?
Well, because he thinks that it will be balanced by the redneck North Florida maggot vote.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, if you go back and you actually look at the vote totals when he was running against what was his name, Gillum. He won his election by a tiny percentage of votes. And that's why every time I mention Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, I say, who was only elected with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis. Knowing what we know about the United States of America, knowing what we know about Florida, knowing that an actual Nazi group ran robocalls into Florida.
Yeah.
Everybody who voted for Ron Monkey Up DeSantis literally got in bed with Nazis. And if you press them on it, they go, well, okay, what of it? Yeah. And my apologies to everybody. We were gone for about 4 minutes. That's how long it took me to realize. And thank you to Ralphs for letting me know we were gone. We were gone for about 4 minutes, though, so that's going to be your four-minute gap in the podcast. My apologies. Randy, it's good to hear from you. Okay. I hope you have a wonderful evening. Stay safe. Did you sort out your air conditioner?
Someone left a big-ass shovel outside the construction project that's wrapped up here.
Oh, beautiful. Did you happen to get your air conditioning sorted out?
Not quite yet. No, not quite yet.
I
have to run one project at a time here because it's like living in the haunted house here.
No, I believe me, I know. You know, it took as long as it did to get the air conditioner fixed because we had to fix three problems before we got to that. And all the credit goes to Annette for that. She saw the heat was going up again, and she said, "I can't take any more of you sitting back there in 90 degrees and coming in here all sweating and nasty."
Right.
So, you know, well, big
hopefully
praise
we saved
to
your equipment. I'm sorry if I got nasty there. Like, it was kind of important to save the equipment, yeah.
No, you didn't get nasty. You didn't get nasty at all. You're fine. Randy, you have a wonderful evening. You hear?
All right, bye-bye.
All right,
thank you.
Take care. Bye. Our pal Randy Radar in PA. A couple of things worthy of mention. Ron in Raleigh mentioned something that I've got in the stack. In case you haven't heard, Elon Musk's oldest daughter has come out as transgender, and she wishes to be called Vivian Wilson. Wilson is her mother's name. Her mother divorced Elon Musk in 2008. She said, and I think his ex is married to a trans person. Musk's daughter says she doesn't want to have anything to do with her shitheel father. Ron in Raleigh says, "I added the shitheel part. I say good on her and fuck that guy. I despise Elon Musk a little bit more every damn day." But it's also worthy of mention that this story hit the wires. I saw it earlier today. And I was a little bit queasy about it. Because I get real uncomfortable about the idea of outing someone up until they themselves come out. Now, she's 18 years old. I will not use her dead name. She was assigned male at birth. And she filed papers in a California court for her name change. and in her pleadings added that she wished to be in no wise associated whatsoever with her sperm donor. Because the idea of Elon Musk ever actually being anything resembling a father is positively tragicomic. But, yeah, it was a little with the way that the media jumped on it and outed the child. And I'm sorry, 18 is still a child as far as I'm concerned. We can talk about it being an age of consent or anything like that, but, yeah. But, you know, right, good on her. And I hope the court honors her wishes, and all the best in life to young Vivian Wilson, and may it be a happy one, free of any contact with that shitheel, Elon Musk. Jude says, the cold. Memories of my brother who worked up at Prudhoe Bay revisit me as you and Flavio were engaging. Chilled to the bone as I visited with him when taking me to where he had worked at Clear Alaska, the early ballistic site. It was the Aurora Borealis that captured my spirit. Discovered beauty at such an odd place on this pale blue dot. Oh, the Aurora Borealis is a thing to behold, and you know I'd love to see it sometime. And the other thing, I've always thought that it would be absolutely delightful to spend the summer solstice above the Arctic Circle for the midnight sun, and then do it again, say, in southern New Zealand in December for the winter solstice and the beginning of summer there. And, you know, for our friends in the southern hemisphere, hopefully some respite comes with the beginning of winter, and maybe you get a little break from the climate change-induced miseries that your country and your little continent have been subjected to. Little continent, she said. Oh, please. Let's run over and check in back on the stress line in the remaining moments of the program. Hey, welcome to the show.
Princess Packet, how the fuck are you?
Ah, you know, if I was any better, I wouldn't be in Florida, but I'd be some. No, I'm happy, and I'm happy where I am. How you doing, Scary Jerry?
I just got out of the hospital. I had a hit and run.
What the
driver
fuck?
Almost run me over last night. Yeah, I got stories.
Spill.
Yeah, no, I distinctly remember, and well, I'm not going to make it out of this one. What a ride this was. Those are scary thoughts to wrap your mind around. The only thing that saved me was the type of bike I was riding. Rider was coming. I came off the sidewalk on a street I grew up on, so I reduced my defenses. And the last thing I remember before I hit the car was, is that a car? And, all right, that's the wheel. So now I'm spinning away from there. Yeah, that happened. Yeah, I just got out of hospital.
How banged up are you?
Admittedly, not a scratch, Robin. I got a twisted ankle. My bike's twisted. I'm traumatized because you're not supposed to see wheels and exhaust at that level.
No, that's not a good sign.
To be honest, I had to kind of experience that one of those TV passes talk about and ask people to send money. Because there were magical celestial things going on. I could almost perceive a bubble of some Marvel Avenger shit. And then everything worked out. Bus rolled. The cop that was standing there didn't even turn on his lights. Car rolled away. Bus showed up, let me on, got me to work, believe it or not, because I wanted to get out of there. I was like, it shot. There was somebody at work who wasn't supposed to be there. He brought me some weed. I passed out, finished my job, and the rabbis that picked me in, they scooped me up and put me in the hospital to make sure I was okay. They're the most benevolent gangster organization on the planet. And I'm happy to be alive. I feel like a tourist. I've actually walked past mirrors looking to see if I still cast a reflection. So how you doing?
Yeah, I know. It's like what I say with Tracy. Apart from everything else, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? You know, I'm okay. I love these sunny days. I love being out in them, but I have to take. I would just be burnt to a crisp down where you are. I have no protection against the sun. But
there are no bad days, Robin.
There are no bad days. There you go, says the guy who recently got run over. There are no bad days. Every day above the dirt is a good one.
Yeah, when you start seeing the credits, though, and you get really fucking... I got a couple of stories I'm going to try to tell them quick.
Okay.
They're both Florida stories, and they're just really intriguing. One time, a long time ago, I collected the energies and the greed of an export and some mafia guys who were running export stuff. And I put together one of the first video broadcasting sexy type things on the planet. The difference with us is we talked to escorts and said, hey, how about if you make 5 times the money and nobody has to touch you unless you really want to? And nobody got the concept for the last hour. And that was a precursor to OnlyFans. But I couldn't do it because I had a daughter. If that makes any sense. I have 3 daughters. But the important thing to remember is one of those spiritual magical experiences. One of my partners tried to rip me off. Well, did rip me off about $30,000. Took our seed money and put it in his pocket. Bought beer and flip-flops. One of the classic Florida rednecks who said, that nigger don't know what he's talking about. I'm just going to pocket this money. And then when it all turned out to be true, the discrepancy was noted by me. I caught the discrepancy and I invited him into the office, opulent office. And before he got there, I started spreading out the thick, heavy plastic to cover the couches for blood spatter. I was going to shoot him multiple times. I wasn't even yelling and screaming. I made a white man shit his pants that day because the bullet kept jamming. And on the head of the revolver, on the fourth time, when the bullet cleared into the chamber, by biblical terms, I had a vision. And I imagined myself, keep in mind, this is 1996. I saw a black glass object in my hand and I was having a conversation that I can only hear one side of the conversation. Now, fast forward to 3 days ago. I had the other side of that conversation with my granddaughter. You hearing me, Robin? She's like, hi, Granddad. How you doing?
Uh-huh.
I want to talk to you. When are you going to come see me? It's the first conversation we had because up until now, it's just baby gibberish. But all of a sudden, she's talking in full sentences and paragraphs. All I could think of when I was like not flying through the air, trying to slide. Not slide, but stop moving so I don't go into the car. I told her I was going to meet her at the end of the life, and I'm halfway done. I got to read her at the end of that book. The point is, something distracted me and said, if you do this, this is going to happen. Her mom wasn't born yet. Always been one of those weird ass things that made no sense to me. Until 2 decades later. You hear what I'm saying to you? That happened. I'm not asking
for
donations.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes
you join my church to buy my book.
Yeah, sometimes you have to wait a little bit for things to sort of, you know, come proper. And by the way, Jude mm-hmm. says to Jerry, we hold you close.
So now to the fun part. I am on Telegram. You know, trying to talk to the Chinese about various things. And all of a sudden I get hit on by what I'm sure was a Russian bot or spy organization or whatever. And I'm like, I don't even have a picture of, and I'm not here for dating. Why are you fucking with me? Seriously. Whatever. So I told him what I think, blah, 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 blah. But meanwhile, we're actually having a good time conversating. I told her specifically, look, in the 80s, I used to work for a cocaine fuel advertising specialty company that were the best scammers on the planet. We could sell pizza ovens and hell. I mean, we're the reason why a lot of laws are developed. So you're in the big boy club. If you're going to try to do something, come correct. I had the fascination of somebody watching a three-card Monty game. Not that I was going to bet, but, you know, man, this hustle's pretty good. So me and this person connected, even though I said, you know what, your story is mostly bullshit, and you say American wrong. That's how I know you're not an American. You know what I'm saying? Americans don't say America like you do. You need to practice that. And none of your pictures are for sport, but whatever. But I like your skills and talent. It's a fucked up world that my best friend is a record skipper. Because I said, hey, if all you want is a new iPhone 8, I'm going to send it to you based on just the therapy you're giving me. We've spoken for hours and hours and hours, and I can't get a real therapist on the phone. And if I went to one of these weekends, it'd be $5,000. So this was therapeutic. I'm having a... You remember that movie True Romance?
Yeah.
I'm having an experience like that. Get in the car. I know what you do. I don't care anyway. Come on. And it's weird. Anyways, I talked to one of my rabbis last night. I was worrying about this thing. And I told him, you're not going to win, guys. I'm pulling for it. But you're not going to win. This train is coming. So when it all falls apart, I'm rolling with you guys and your rainbow flag people. We got to stick together. This is bigger. You, from a totally agnostic standpoint, you have decoded this perfectly. You realize that? We are in a civil war. This is Christian fascism. Ellen G. White, 100 years ago, predicted all of this. She just wasn't very specific. And she was a crazy little white woman, so nobody really paid attention to her. And if you're going to tell the truth about oppressive governments, you got to use codes and fairy tales like Revelation and stuff you said. She predicted all the violence and the Christian stuff. And when you have Boebert and MPG, that's her new name, MPG. Print that. We start going, we need Jesus. So jumping up and down, this is all going somewhere, man. In fact, I have a strong feeling that none of these school shootings are even random. They're planned in dark places on the internet. Because if you notice, all these people who do the shootings have all of a sudden incredible legal representation, and then they fail. Have you noticed that?
Say again?
Have you? These shooters all make bail and have incredible legal representation.
Oh,
have
yeah. Well, there's an active network of people out there taking care of them. One single person bailed out the 31 Nazis in Coeur d'Alene.
One anonymous donor gave Rittenhouse $2 million. One anonymous donor gave the fucker in Minnesota, paid for good lawyers for him. One anonymous donor paid for those two fuck sticks in Georgia. The dots are impossible to connect.
Yeah, and oddly enough, I had a cop story to sort of end the
program.
I had a cop story to end the program. It also comes out of Idaho, Jerry. A cop for the Lewiston, Idaho Police Department by the name of Corporal Brittany Brokop and her partner blew away a mentally ill man who was holding a knife and was actually only a threat to himself. The prosecuting attorney examined the case and held that she and her partner were A-OK for blowing away the mentally ill man who was no threat to them whatsoever. You know what her body cam footage disclosed her first words were after she wasted this poor dude?
What was that?
Guess I'm going to lose my gun again.
Oh, I heard that last week. I'm so way past that. I'm on the Uvalde. How come nobody will give a body cam or testimony on the road?
Oh, I know.
Or cameras.
Well, what's interesting is she said, guess I'm going to lose my gun again, because she had shot somebody else back in 2020 working for the same sheriff's office. Guess I'm...
It's on Reddit. Was talking about why won't black people comply? Because we just obviously had a gun waving thing with a, you know, a cop pulls out a gun because the guy's not wearing his t-shirt, or not t-shirt, his seatbelt. I'm like, huh? You know what? This whole bullshit about you here to protect me and worried about my safety, you can fucking shove that up your ass. All right?
Yeah. Well, and
nobody did anything.
Yeah, and dude in Idaho was just this pathetic middle-aged white guy. You know, when the cops don't really have a large black population to waste, they'll start on the white folks.
Yeah. I don't know. I made a post that said, with this Texas succession thing going, okay, I don't know, where do I buy drugs, sugar, shoes, or guns first? This is starting to seem like the road. And the road told me about I need to buy shoes. The shoes are currency. It's all falling apart on purpose. There's going to be $20 loaf bread next year because Putin is setting grain fields on fire or contaminating them where there's nobody to harvest them. The scariest chart in the world right now, it's not the oil chart, it's the wheat chart.
Oh, I have another friend who says worldwide famine is on the way. I hope he's wrong.
Yeah.
Jerry, I got to get out of here, though. I got to get out of here because we've run over time.
We'll pick it up. This is pre prayer meeting Wednesday, anyways. We all got to stick together. I don't and cope. That flag of it's all going to get better. I've given that up. I'm going to go see one of my DJs in 3 weeks that I've always pirated his shit, and finally, I'm going to put some money in his pocket for all the joy that he's given me. Which is how the process works. Paul Oakenfell at the Hard Rock. Just putting that out there. And I'm enjoying all the things I love about civilization for as long as I can. I love you, Robin. Love
soak
y'all.
In it. We love you, Jerry. Take care of yourself and stay out of traffic, will you?
Yeah. Right about that. Thank you.
I mean, you really can't overestimate the value of that. We'll talk soon. Bye now. And so Scary Jerry closes the program. A little bit over time, but hey, lost a little time in the reboot, so maybe we made it all good. Thanks, everybody. Tomorrow, the fundraising goal will be 1430, so we're making progress. We actually funded an entire day's programming and $30 more today, so that's fantastic. Thanks to all of our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to all volunteer staff. Thank you to Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, all around great guy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Enjoy this summer solstice. It is a magic day. There's magic in the air. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And now a union shop for, the last half year or so. Things are going swimmingly. Thank you to each and every one of you who reach out and ask your elected member of the House of Representatives to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. Please, please, please stay safe. Get your second booster. Be strategic about it. Watch out for Omicron, the new variants. wear your mask in busy places. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Keep it handy. I've still got a bottle right down here in the studio. Take some with me everywhere I go. 15 to 20 feet is your social distance, according to Paul from Parts Unknown. And, of course, if somebody comes towards you saying, you know, like 18 times,
they were passing USB, they were passing USB ports.
Avoid that head maggot like the plague, because he is. And, by the way, a quick update. I was suggesting earlier that I hoped that Ms. Moss would sue the living bejesus out of Nitwit Nero. Well, she's already sued Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, for defamation. Onan has already settled, and the case against Rudy Giuliani is ongoing. And we can hope that at some point in time she sues Nitwit Nero. Of course, then again, maybe maybe he's too broke to be worth suing. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Happy solstice. Later.